Welcome to Pastor Aggressive Podcast.
Real life, real faith, real talk.
This is actually an iconic episode. This is a milestone episode because it might be the last episode of Pastor Aggressive Podcast because Zach and I are at odds. But that's okay because you recently pulled a friendship out of the bowels of hell. So we should be fine. We'll make it.
Yeah.
Plus, man. I'm going to be gone for a week. So it's like, you know, absence makes the heart grow fonder or whatever the LGBTQ saying is. I don't remember.
Yeah. When you come back, we'll join the Methodists.
Boy, I am fired up today. I am ready for an awesome podcast. I'm ready. I'm like an E mega church pastor at 11 o'clock on a Friday morning. Ready, buddy. I am. Woo, baby. I'm ready to go.
I'm Blue Chew ready.
I'm fired up. This episode brought to you by Blue Chew. No, that's not true.
Can Christians be sponsored by Blue Chew? Sure.
That's a good question.
I mean, if you're married, you can't really, you know.
That's just healthy intimacy.
If the goose doesn't go with the gander or whatever they say, you know what I'm saying?
There was a... I mean... You should preach about intimacy and Blue Chew from the pulpit or something. I don't know. Anyway, we just got back from a Bible study.
Yep.
Where Zach was disappointed that I didn't immediately shoot down some slight Christian nationalism.
Just that fake news framing right here, boy. Nah. I don't know, bro. I just wish you'd express the way you really feel more often. But I don't know what the balance is with that and you being a pastor.
Well, you know.
Don't want to offend people.
Right. We don't want to offend people. But Jesus says, pray for those, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. But then on the other hand, Trump says, nah, I ain't about that. I hate my opponents. So... We're going to get canceled this episode, buddy.
Which, you can be a Christian nationalist and not be a fan of Trump, but normally you're like a Nick Fuentes, where you're not a fan of Trump because he's not doing enough.
He's not fascist enough for you.
What does fascist even mean? Yeah.
I honestly couldn't tell you.
You just said that.
Hey, buddy, I'm just trying to get us... I'm just clickbaiting through this thing, man.
I'm trying to
get us as much negative publicity as possible.
Do you know what Fresh and Fit is?
No.
They're like a podcast like thing. Like they talk to women. They're like Red Pill. This guy Marlon, he kind of like split off from it and is doing his own thing.
Marlon Wayans of Scary Movie fame?
No, bro. It's this guy named Marlon. I think his name is Marlon. But anyways, he's like super conservative, super Red Pill. And he was talking to this white guy in like a chat room, this like super like white supremacist guy. And he was like...
Stephen Miller?
No. He was like... I don't know like what you think you're doing fighting for our cause. We're not going to want you here when we win anyways.
Yo.
And that, I think that's the type of people that like a Nick Fuentes, like Trump isn't doing enough. But anyways, Christian nationalists, I think, can be Christian nationalists and not believe in Trump. But I disagreed with a guy in our Bible study on like, should America be a Christian government?
And I say Christian nationalist. We're way overplaying it. It was not a Christian
nationalist.
He's not a Christian nationalist at all. But that conversation came up, and you disagreed with how I handled it, which is fine. But you didn't call me out in front of everybody, so that was fine.
Yes. I don't know if I disagree with how you handled it. I just kind of wanted to...
You wish I would have gone a little bit more into the paint.
That's me knowing you as a friend, and we should talk about this on a podcast. It's kind of something I'm kind of realizing is like it's hard for me to see you as my pastor.
Yeah, I'm writing a book about that. I know I just wrote a book and it just came out.
Bro, this guy always is talking about his books.
But I am writing another book.
You're like a non-denom pastor. Dude. You're like, check out my new book with a lion on the front of it. Super original.
I'm writing all kinds of new books.
I actually love.
I have a lot of ideas.
You do. I love that idea because it's hard to minister. When we were reading in Acts 27, right?
Yeah.
Where Paul is like breaking bread with the shipmen, and he's praying over the food. It made me realize like a stupid like kind of. Off the side subject, but like, do I bless food when I'm around people that aren't Christians? Do I practice my faith when I'm around people who aren't Christians? But it's kind of the same thing with family or people you're close with. Yeah. Do I practice my faith? Do I act the way I should act when I'm around people I'm comfortable with? I would argue no.
Yeah, me. That's interesting.
It is interesting.
I've actually had a conversation with somebody recently about this, about how difficult it is in a marriage. Sometimes it feels awkward to pray with your spouse.
Yeah.
But that makes no sense.
No.
That has to be the devil. That has to be the enemy.
That's the point of marriage.
Because there's absolutely no reason that it should ever feel awkward to pray with your spouse.
Yeah. Or your friends. Like, I have friends I met in the church, and the closer we got, the more we cared about things that weren't church-related. And I'm like, this isn't what this is about. We need to refocus this and redirect it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know how we got there from Christian nationalism. Hopefully our live podcast isn't as bad as this is right now.
Which, by the way, we have a live podcast October 18th.
Pop out. Yep. Ask us some hard questions.
Yeah, please ask us some
hard
questions.
Nothing too hard, though.
We'd really like questions about eschatology, because that's what the book's about, but it doesn't have to be about that. But that would be
fun. Isn't eschatology just your reason for believing something?
No, eschatology is like end times theology.
Oh, what's like, the epistemology.
Epistemology, yeah.
Yeah. Too many ologies, dude.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And there's only one ology I care about, and that's Jesus-ology.
Yeah, there you go. That's
or theology.
Yeah. That's literally, yeah, okay. Yeah, so I do want to get back to what you were talking about, though, because I think I've talked to you about this, but I did start a second book out of just like, I started thinking about what I needed as a pastor. Like the book that just came out is about like, maybe this will help some Christians that are like fearful or even maybe like impatient about the coming of Christ or like not sure how, or like afraid of reading Revelation. The first book would maybe like help comfort and ease and help people understand things, or maybe even just be okay with the fact that we don't have to understand everything.
Yeah.
That's kind of the purpose of that book. But the second one is more directed at like pastors and what I wish I would have had as a pastor, like a resource that just does not exist as far as I know. And that is one, like nobody talks about this in Bible college at all, but how difficult it is to be a pastor to your close friends and your family. And especially like in-laws or people who have known you for a long time and they've seen you maybe at your worst, or like your spouse who's definitely sees me at my worst. You know, your friends that live in your basement that see you at your worst, all of those things, and how difficult that is to pastor people, because it's not only difficult for them to have to set aside, like see you in a different light for different purposes, but also how to minister to those people in a way that like doesn't feel domineering. I had to say to someone recently that I love you as a friend, but right now I need to speak to you as your pastor.
Yeah.
And that's that's a conversation that's not really always easy to have. But there has to be that differentiation sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And because otherwise I don't know, you can disagree with my opinions on things and that's fine. But if you wanted my counsel, it would have to come from a different place. It couldn't just be my opinion, because I already know that you think that's dog water.
Well, and that's kind of, not that I think your opinion is dog water, but I think we disagree on enough, I think, like important things to me. Like, I'm in a weird place with the scriptures right now, so.
Yeah.
But I trust that you have an openness and like a willingness to explore these ideas with me. It doesn't sound like anything you've never heard before, which makes me comfortable.
Yeah.
But also I know your streamline of thought, and I don't know if I'm on that same streamline of thought completely, right? We agree on the fundamental things. Like,
right.
We both know that Christ is Lord. We both believe in the Trinity. We both believe in important things, and I learn a lot from you. I learned from your Bible study today. I learned from your sermons. But like, the longer I'm living with you, the harder it is for me to learn from you, because it's hard for me to keep an open mind.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to look at you as my teacher, because when I first met you, I was driving to Bloomington for work, and then whenever I had free time on my way home, I'd stop in and come see you. Yeah. And you were a mentor to me.
Yeah.
And I want you, I'm just going to be blunt, I miss that.
Yeah.
I miss that I saw you as a mentor, and now I see you as a friend, a peer, an equal.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's right. I don't think I should see you as that, because you're not that. You are my friend. You are equal to me in a sense.
Yeah.
But I said it tonight in Bible study. I was like, how do we know? You asked the question. What was the question you asked when I said we need, Eli said we need wise counsel. Do you remember the question you asked before that?
How do we discern what's actually wise counsel? Is that the
way? No, you were asking, how do we discern what is scripture, or how do we discern
the interpretation of scripture?
The interpretation. I don't think that was a question, but it works.
Yeah.
I need wise counsel around me, and I want to see you as wise counsel. I want you to see, because you are wiser than me. You're longer in the faith than me. You're older than me. You do a lot more than me. You hear a lot more perspectives than I do. And maybe I don't value that enough, because we're like watching The Nun 2 together. And we're like watching Toxic Avenger. And those things aren't bad, but I'm tripping myself up. I hope you see what I'm saying.
And then I'm like, maybe The Nun 2 is changing my theology on the Eucharist.
Yeah, that's just crazy. But no, I think something I struggle with is you're very free in your faith. And I don't know. I don't feel like I can be as loose as you are. Does that make sense? Like, when I think of, like I just think of orthodoxy, man. I hate that I always bring this up.
Well, this is a point that got brought up in the Bible study today that I thought was really good, is how do we know what are the things that we should be open-minded with, and what things are the things we got to, like, stand our ground, and the hills that we should die on, right?
Right.
And I would argue that, only because I've seen what it can do to relationships to argue about the things that I would consider less, more tertiary issues than like primary issues of the faith or like salvific issues. But if they're like secondary or tertiary issues, I'm not as apt to fight about them or argue about them, because I've seen the damage that can do.
But we've always been good at having, I mean, that's what this podcast came out of, right? Was having hard conversation. But I think what makes it hard now is that you said it earlier. You said something about like having room to learn to love that person again or whatever.
Yeah,
you said,
yeah, yeah.
Whatever gay thing you said. Now, if we have like a hard disagreement, there's no time in between to think about our own thoughts. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then come back together. It used to be I saw you every Thursday night, Sunday, and maybe a night in between. You know? Now it's like we have a hard disagreement. We see each other the next day, and we're making little sly jokes about our disagreement.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Instead of like being able to fully form our thoughts. And those are just little things. You know what I mean? Those are things that get worked out, and nothing I'm like hardcore tripping over. But I don't know. I just felt like I should express that to you, how I'm kind of feeling about that.
No, I think that's fair. I think that's a I don't know what the answer is to that. But I do know that that's an issue, because it's been an issue. You saw it yesterday when you came to like Tiffany's family thing.
Yeah.
And like, like my jokes didn't land. Bro. And like, and then I'm talking about my book and my niece is like, oh, people will buy that. Like,
I know.
And it's like, oh yeah, there's like a level of like, there's a level of disconnect with my family that they're like, what? Like, for example, it's interesting just like the different levels of like how they see me. But so like my niece who's 14 or 15, she was kind of joking, but I think there was also like some doubt in that, like, why would somebody buy my uncle's book is
right.
Like the way she sees it. Like, that's nothing to me. But then I have another niece on the other side of my family who's on the other side of the country. Like,
yeah.
She lives far away, and she's in her 20s, and she's mature in her faith, and she's, like, very excited about this book. Those are different perspectives, but they're both family members, and they both have seen me at like goofier times in my life or whatever, but one is more mature in her faith and one is she's older. She's experienced more. And so there's that, and there is more distance probably. She sees me definitely less than the other.
Yeah.
And so there's like this different, it's kind of like when you came and saw my band perform for the first time.
Yeah.
You could hear about me being in a band and you're like, oh, this is just some old guy playing music.
Yeah.
But then when you see like the crowd reaction and the stuff that we do and stuff, it's like, oh, this is kind of a big deal to some people. Yeah. And that makes it feel different. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I thought you were like just some bozo like playing guitar on the street in downtown Indy.
Right. But the same niece that said, oh, people would actually buy your book would also be like just absolutely shocked at maybe if she knew like how many records I've sold. You know what I mean?
Also, like she doesn't care about theology.
Right.
She doesn't care about learning in the faith yet, I don't think. So it's like,
yeah,
it's also something she's just not going to care about. So we naturally assume people aren't going to care about things that we don't care about.
Right, right. Oh, yeah, yeah, that's a good point.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I'm excited for your book, bro. But yeah, I got that vibe yesterday where you like dropped a joke about, what was the joke?
Well, we were talking about the Jonestown massacre with Jim Jones, and like we were talking about cults. It started from Tiffany talking about what she always talks about wanting her parents to buy a bunch of land and then all of us live on a compound together. And I'm like, with me being a pastor, that kind of just sounds culty.
Yeah.
And
or non-denom.
And she and then her stepdad said something about Jonestown and Jim Jones, and we were like not making light of it, but we were like, oh yeah, that's what we think of when we think of like a compound living. And we were explaining who Jim Jones was.
Mm-hmm.
And then their family friend that was there, she was like, yeah, I just watched a documentary about him and about Jonestown. And she's like, there's this really creepy moment where he's like seducing people to come, like seducing women to come into his office.
Yeah.
And she's like, and it's like when he's still a pastor, and it's like he's seducing women to come into his pastor's office. And I was like, man, I'm always trying to get people to leave me alone in my office. And you laughed, and the rest of the room just like stared at me like I was like, I genuinely didn't want to talk to people or something.
Yo, it and was I was like, so embarrassing, dude. I was so sick of you did the thing where you drop a joke and nobody laughs, and then you laugh at your own joke, and you're sitting there like smiling, like waiting for everybody to laugh with you, and I lost it,
nobody. It just completely fell flat.
Oh my gosh. And that was messed up, bro, because that wasn't that bad of a joke, dude.
No, it's a pretty funny joke. But they almost had a look on their face like, you really are annoyed to have to talk to people? You're a pastor. Yeah. And I'm like, no, that's the joke. Like, yeah.
Oh, no, dude. That was hilarious. Yeah. People, I mean, I struggle with the same thing with my mom, bro. Like, my mom or my brothers, like, I can't tell them nothing because it's just not, it just doesn't hit the same, man. It just doesn't hit the same when it's coming from a friend or a family member.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there's a way to work around that. You know what I'm saying? I'm sure you don't like demand reverential respect, is something I've noticed about you.
Yeah.
Which I think is a good thing, but I think we should have reverence for pastors or leaders in the church. You know what I mean? Or elders.
Yeah. No, I think so. I think there definitely should be. But
the boiling point is like, I just want to have a reverence for you in that sense.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I do.
My new thing, and it shouldn't be a new thing. It should be the thing that I have always gone to, but we learn as we get older. My new thing, and I would suggest this for you in this, would just be pray about it. Like, that's what I've been doing with all these things that I'm like, I don't, and I mentioned that in the Bible study today, where there's something where I don't agree with somebody's perspective on scripture, then I'm like, rather than being like, well, I just know that my way is right, I'm like, I'm going to pray about this and let the Holy Spirit lead me on it and be like, God, if I need to change my mind about this, give me a clear reason to change my mind about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think my problem right now is like, it's not like I have my mind made up about anything, but I kind of just don't believe. I'm kind of like in this, like on the fence not with the faith, but I'm on the fence about a lot of like doctrinal issues.
Yeah.
And it's just hard for me to like trust. Oh, this might be a me problem. It's kind of hard for me to trust anybody.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to trust anybody or what anybody's saying because a lot of the things I hear are unfounded. But then we were talking about Age of Accountability, and I was very surprised to hear you quote scripture on that because that's normally just like a easy believism idea of like, well, I refuse to believe babies go to hell, so
right,
babies don't
right.
go to hell. You know what I mean? I thought, and that was my false assumption of you, is that you were coming from that stance, and I'm like, well, do you got any scripture for that, you fatty? And you're like, you're like, yeah, dude, here, check this out.
Well, that is interesting.
Do dogs go to heaven?
I don't want to talk about it. Not my dog.
Definitely not. He's in the ninth layer of hell, dude.
So there's... You said something interesting that now I want to talk about. And I don't mean this as an attack against you at all. It's pretty revealing. So you were like, maybe that's a me thing that I don't really trust people. And that made me think about a couple weeks ago, you had come back from a Bible study at the other church that you go to. And you had mentioned the same thing about your pastor, who we both love and respect. And though I may not agree with him on everything, I definitely respect his thoughts on scripture for sure.
Sure.
I think he's very wise and I think he's very well studied.
Super.
And I absolutely would trust him on a lot of things. We just disagree on some little things. But that being said, you were talking about Bible study and you had kind of like you came back from Bible study and you said something about like, yeah, I don't know, man. I wasn't really feeling it there. You had gotten into it sort of with somebody there at that Bible study, and you were like, and I don't really agree with this thing that the pastor said.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what happened a little bit today.
Mm-hmm.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I don't think that's a bad thing, but I think you might be in like a challenging place in your faith. Not that you're challenging the faith, but like a kind of like challenge.
I hear what you're saying.
Challenge, like authority figures kind of stage. And I would be the first one to say that I actually think that's a very good thing. I don't think it's a bad thing.
Well, something I want you to know is that, you know, I may disagree with you for not speaking up like I thought you should have, whatever that means. That's probably invalid. But I don't disagree with the whole entire Bible study. You know what I'm saying?
Right, like
the whole
thing. Right.
So that with Tim, my pastor, I don't love everything he says. But his sermon on Sunday last week, I loved it.
Yeah.
He maybe threw a little predestination in there, but it's like, okay, I can work around that. You know what I'm saying?
And you've quoted his sermon several times this week, like saying like good things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like really good things about it.
But honestly, I'm just going to be transparent. Like I kind of had some resentment towards him. You know what I'm saying? Until I like have been at your church. I've been at your church consistently probably for like a couple months now, few months.
Yeah.
And being able to get that distance and go back to him, I'm like, it was a whole nother thing. You know, that was gone immediately.
I made that stupid joke at the beginning of this podcast, but it actually kind of has been a running theme of the podcast.
What joke?
The thing about distance and absence making the heart grow fonder.
That's real.
That is a real thing, yeah.
That's
like
real,
there's
bro.
Something there. Yeah, that's for real, man. We diss on like silly like Hallmark sayings all the time, but that I think there's something real about that.
What did Jesus do when he was challenged? He withdrew.
Yeah, yeah.
He withdrew and he prayed.
Yeah.
He went to be alone. And sometimes when he went to do that, you know, he was interrupted and had to feed 5,000
people. A lot
of times,
whatever,
you know what I'm saying? But that's like the really challenging times is like, for me, something I've been struggling with is like, bro, I used to like, if I wasn't doing something, I was alone. Like doing my own thing completely alone. And something I'm really challenged with here is like, if I'm not, you know, doing some type of ministry, some type of studies or working, I'm here, but I'm like, I'm not in a familiar place like I was. It's not the place that's unfamiliar. It's my mind state of like being completely alone and uninterrupted. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
But this is what I was saying in Bible study. It was like, God's challenging me in ways that I would have never challenged myself. So while these things are like irritating me, you know, the kids screaming or whatever and acting wild, it might be irritating to me, but it might be something I need to change my perspective on. Not like, oh God, why have you put me here? This sucks.
Right, right.
Oh God, what are you doing in putting me here?
Yeah, yeah.
Because this is your everyday life. And it's kind of eye-opening for me to see this.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen you get angry or upset, but dude, if I was you, I would lose my shit, dude. I would seriously lose my mind. When I was driving you guys home last night and Iris is screaming about the internet, I was about to like grab a tool and throw it at her head right behind me, dude. I'm like, dude, I would just crash out if I was you.
Let's be clear. She was screaming about the internet.
The internet, dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like you can't even say it right.
Yeah.
But yeah. So it's good and it's bad. You know what I'm saying? I see a whole nother side of you, but it also shows me how much you're dealing with and how much you're still doing while you're dealing with all this. Yesterday, you like were at the hospital all day, and then we're like sitting at Tiffany's parents' house, drinking a couple. Well, I'm drinking a couple of beers. Warner doesn't do that. just in case that Facebook guy's watching. Nah, he really wasn't drinking.
No, what was it? I don't even. I think I had a zero sugar cherry Coke, which is not my go-to. But it was busting.
How do you even
busting.
Do zero sugar cherry Coke?
I don't know, dude. But
stuff is sugar.
I know, but it was so good. It was actually really good.
That's that red 39. You know what I'm saying?
That red 6-7.
All right.
All right. By the way.
And then Tiffany goes and picks up a lady's kids who's like in the hospital and brings them home. And you guys are dealing with that all day. And I'm like, I'm sitting down here trying to play the game. And I'm like, oh my gosh, dude, these kids won't shut up. But then I'm thinking, but now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, wait, but they're dealing with this themselves. I'm just kind of off in the distance, having to hear the remnants. They're dealing with this themselves. It's kind of crazy.
It's just, man, it's just part of it. And sometimes, I don't want to say autopilot, because that sounds bad. But sometimes you just are doing it, and you don't really notice, if that makes sense. When it becomes a part of your life where it's just like, okay, we are in service mode, whatever that looks like, then you just keep doing it and you're like, okay, well, this is where we're at. There's nothing I can do to change the situation. Like, there's nothing I could do to change the fact that my friend was in the hospital yesterday. I just had to go be there.
Right.
And it's like, well, yeah, there's other stuff that probably needs to happen, but I'm going to go do this thing. And it might take the entire day, and that's okay.
Yeah.
But that's not something that happens overnight. That's not a thing. Like, I'm not inherently patient, if that makes sense.
Nah, bro, but I've seen you definitely growing in patience, like, rapidly, bro. Mm. You know, here's what you think. Another thing that I'm kind of insecure about is, like, you guys seeing my lifestyle now. You know what I'm saying? Like, what? You seeing a ghost in here or something? Why are you looking around all weird? Like
no, that? The light is blinding me really bad.
Oh.
We've been watching too many Annabelle movies, buddy.
Yo, we're almost through it. We're in The Conjuring. But, like, yeah, like, me, like, playing the game or going to the gas station all the time or, like, eating like
you
crap.
Do go to the gas station a lot. Like, it's
probably
an inhuman
once a day.
Amount.
Probably once or twice a day.
Yeah, but that's okay.
You know what I'm saying? I'm kind of insecure.
I'm kind of feeling like going to the gas station after this. You know what I'm saying?
Why?
Oh no, I've got energy drinks. I'm good.
Yeah, bro, you're chilling.
I'm
but
all
it's
set.
Also 9 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
You don't need that.
No, I just need a bunch of sugary, fatty foods.
Yeah. I need some Taco Bell right
I got,
now.
I got a friend who's trying to get me to eat like all clean food.
Blood tripping.
For like the rest of the month. Well, and then like all of next month, and I'm like, I don't know, dude. I don't think you understand how unclean my food is. And let no man say what the Lord has made clean is unclean. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's a Baptist.
that is, yeah.
Church statement, dude.
Yeah, dude.
What were we going to talk about today?
I don't even know. I didn't have a plan.
I didn't have a plan either.
We were just winging it.
Let's talk about the four anchors in Acts 27.
The four anchors in Acts 27?
Yeah, let's think of four anchors of our faith on the spot.
They cut loose the anchors in that chapter, Zach. I don't know that that's really what we want to do here. I will say this.
But they drop them for a time.
They do. I think the more notable cutting away thing in Acts 27 is the life raft.
Which is on our last episode of the podcast. We talked about this.
Did
not,
we?
Not this scene from Acts, but we talked about like...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Not having a safety net.
Yeah, without knowing that we were going to talk about it. But yeah, we did talk about not having a safety net.
Yeah.
But yeah, like there's this point where the centurions are like sneakily trying to get off of the inevitably wrecked ship. Yeah. And they're like pretending they're putting down anchors, but they're really lowering the lifeboats so that they can get into them.
Yeah.
And then Paul's like, don't do that because God has only confirmed that the people that are with me are going to be safe. So if you leave, I can't promise your safety.
Yeah.
Your safety is not guaranteed. And so what they do in response is they cut the lifeboats loose, which is crazy.
Crazy.
And they just, they're like, well, if now Paul's God has to save us because otherwise we have no other option.
Do you think this is why the Titanic sunk?
Because
they tried to get away on all those life rafts.
Because they had the opposite. Well, they had the opposite attitude. They said that God couldn't sink that boat.
Yeah. Well, also Paul wasn't there.
That's true. Yeah.
Because, you know, it was because of Paul.
There's an argument to be made that the Apostle John might have been.
Yeah, you're an idiot.
Anyway.
What have you, I talked about it the whole last podcast, but what have you experienced with that? Oh, I know a big one, but I'll let you run with it first.
Cutting the life raft loose?
Yeah. Your safety net.
Determining to leave my job and go full-time into pastor is like the biggest one.
Yeah.
I think that's huge. But there's been other times like, man, I would have to really think about them. I think that's the biggest one though, because I didn't want to do that for so long. I wanted to have another job because I felt like I needed something just in case.
Right.
That was kind of always that's been my attitude my whole entire life, because I even, like when I was going to college the first time, I chose a degree track that had like guaranteed money and like guaranteed job, like need of jobs at the time.
Well, like business management.
No, something? it was radiology.
Wow. Which
at the time in the early 2000s was like they needed like X-ray techs and stuff. It was like all like
that's big money too.
And that was like everywhere they're talking about how they needed more X-ray techs, because it was like the medical technology was booming at the time.
Yeah.
And so there's like, we need people that can do all this stuff. So I was like, yeah, I'll go into radiology. And then I found it to be incredibly like interesting to me, but it was not, I was like, I can't see myself doing this forever.
Right.
But it was like interesting stuff to learn about, and I enjoyed that.
With a promising future.
But it had a promising future, and I was like, that seems like the safest thing.
Right.
Certainly seems safer than going to Bible college when I'm just now getting married.
Yeah.
and then after that, I was working at Lowe's to kind of like pay for going to school. And then retail management at the time, Lowe's was a really booming company and was like on the way up,
mm-hmm.
you know, it was like the lesser one, but it was like building its way to the top.
Really?
And so it was like the upward mobility of the job I was in was very like, there was no limit.
Right.
I was my only limit. And so I quit college because I was like, oh, this definitely seems like a more secure thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and then I always made this argument. I was like, people will always need to build things.
Right.
And then now we've got a housing crisis.
Yeah.
And you can buy building materials on the internet now,
yeah.
which was not a thing back then.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that definitely is not the safety boat that it used to be. But at one time it was like, yeah, this is not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And so I felt like that was like, okay, I need to drop out of college because this needs to be my focus. I need to move up in this company as high as I can.
That's an interesting point, though, because you said that's that safety boat isn't it. It looked like a safety boat at that time.
Yeah.
But it actually ended up probably not being as safe of a boat as you thought it was.
Yeah.
Same thing, probably an axe.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Paul says, if you get in those boats, you may survive, but I can't guarantee it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, yeah. And that's kind of, yeah, that's very true. And so that was a long stint of time, like 14 years. And then that was one I didn't cut. God cut the rope on that one for me. And then,
literally.
Yeah. And then I got into restoration, and that was like, you and I have talked about this. I was not qualified for that job at all.
Well, this is like what you say about David and Goliath, how we're not David. We're the people that were scared to fight Goliath, right?
Yeah.
Same thing on the boat. Those people didn't cut the ropes.
Yeah.
They had like, what is the word? A vessel of God to do it.
Yeah.
Right? So
yeah.
God still cut the ropes for them
yeah.
and saved their lives.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, he did the same sure. thing for you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really cool. I was going to say, we were talking about how this week even, in fact, we were talking about how like I had no business being in project management for yeah. restoration like that.
Yeah.
I didn't have any knowledge of the actual job. I had, now the one thing I would say is I had 14 years of material knowledge.
Right.
So like I knew where to get the things and what need, what
how
I
much
would,
you needed,
what I would need and how much I would need for the job. So that helped.
Yeah.
But I did not know how to do the things.
Right.
Which, granted, with project management, you're hiring people to do the actual job, but not always.
Nah, sometimes you got
to. And there were several times I had to step in and do the thing. And it's like, I don't really know what I'm doing. But I was surrounded by people who did.
Right.
And so I learned a lot in that time. But even that, I had to, like, I was making really good money doing yeah. that. And then when I was starting to pastor, I was making some money from the church also.
Mm-hmm.
It was like per sermon or whatever. It wasn't mm-hmm. like a, you know, like a salary or whatever. But so then I was making even more money. And I was like, okay, I was like making the most money I'd ever made in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And that felt comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I can keep doing this. But the ministry part was suffering.
Right.
And eventually I had to be like, okay, I can't rely on this safety net anymore. And so I had to cut the boat. And honestly, you know, we talk about the like how those safety boats weren't necessarily safe, but they just seemed safe.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was how it was for Lowe's for me. That's how it was for the restoration company for me, too, because honestly, that place since then, I've had a lot of my friends that worked there have left there.
Yeah.
Because things just changed and things went different. And I don't know that. Because I've never been good at leaving stuff on my own, I don't know that I would have been able to leave.
No.
But I made that decision. I'm like, I'm cutting. And I set a date before I had even talked to the church about going full-time as a pastor.
Really?
Yeah.
To quit?
Yeah. I went and talked to my boss at the other job, and I was like, hey, I'm going into full-time ministry, and this is the last date, and we need to find somebody to take my position.
Have you realized how similar our leaving project management story was? Like, that's the same thing I did. I was like, I didn't even have a job lined up.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I'm just going to quit. You know, yeah. It's like one of those things that, like, you have no rational explanation for it, but you just know God's tugging you towards it. You
yeah.
know what I mean? Did you ever feel guilty for, like, having too much money when you were, like, making money off of doing sermons? And then do you ever feel guilty about that while you were doing restoration?
A little bit, but like I've mentioned on the podcast, so I don't feel weird about talking about this. Tiffany and I have always struggled financially.
Mm-hmm.
So when we weren't for a little bit, that felt really good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like yeah,
that's how I experienced
and
it.
And so it was, so I never felt bad about it because we also were, and I'm not like tooting my own horn or anything, but we were also giving in accordance to that. Does that make sense? So,
right, so you're giving more.
So I felt like I was like, yeah. So I didn't feel like I was cheating God in any way or like I wasn't aware of the blessing that it was. But I also, we did a lot of extravagant things at that time that was probably not responsible.
Sure.
Because it was like, we've never had this kind of money, you know?
Right. That's how I was. I mean, that's the way I explain it every time is like, I grew up poor. I always had jobs where I was making, started $15 an hour. Then I thought I was making money when I was making $17 an hour. Then I'm making $18. And then all of a sudden, I'm making like $5,000 a month.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what do I do with this much money?
Yeah.
I'm spending money on car parts. I'm tuning my car. I'm spending money. I was door dashing literally every single night at a point. Every wow. single night I was spending probably $20 to $30 on my just my dinner, right?
Yeah.
So then I got the gas station on top of that in the morning, probably like $12.
Yeah.
Lunch, breakfast. I was eating breakfast, lunch, dinner, all that. $12 for breakfast, $15 for lunch. I'm spending like $80 a day on food.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, what am I doing? Were you ever bitter about, are you, after, so you were doing restoration and you were also preaching, after you left restoration and you kind of started feeling the weight of not having that money, did you ever feel like bitter or resentful towards God?
No.
Never, not once?
No.
Wow, thanks, buddy.
No,
I feel great over here.
No, but that's only by the grace of God. I don't feel bitter about it. That is something that I really struggle. I do get angry about. I get frustrated about not having money, but I get frustrated at myself. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, why is this not working? You know? But then I also, what?
Annabelle?
Annabelle? Then I also find,
I like your doll.
I also find out that, I also find that we have no other things. I'm so thankful. Tiffany and I talked about this, that we have nothing else to argue about. And she's like,
yeah,
but doesn't that make you mad that like we're always getting frustrated about money stuff? And I was like, not really, because I know people who are going through a lot worse.
Yeah.
Like, I would much rather have financial struggles than like her and I not having a good relationship, or our kids not living for the Lord, or yeah, our kids being sick or something like that, that it's like adding to the weight of our experience. Right. If it's just like, oh man, this sucks, our account's overdrawn this week and we're going to have to play really close to the chest for a while.
Yeah.
Or like, hey, I got to go sell some stuff so that we don't get overdrawn, or like, you know, stuff like that happens. And it's frustrating, and we like sometimes we'll argue about it, or like one of us will spend money on something that the other one doesn't think is necessary, and be like, "What are you doing?"
Yeah,
and like those are our arguments, and then it's like, "Well, this is actually a blessing that this is what we have to argue about."
Yeah,
but she's like, "But wouldn't you rather we didn't have anything to argue about?" I'm like, "That's unrealistic, I think."
Yeah, there's like definitely lesser things to have qualms about.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean, and that's a good point. Like financial, like I'm not sick. I'm not dying. I don't have like crushing debt bills or anything like that. But honestly, I've been feeling a little bit of bitterness or resentment. When I was talking to Brayden the other day, the guy that like mentored me in my last job, I was talking to him about the job, and I was just like seeing the fruit of his life. And I'm like, man, what did I do? I made a mistake. But that was like that evil voice in the back of my head where immediately I'm like, no, shut up, stop that. But like, I've probably been getting paid $800 every 2 weeks since I quit my job at Beacon.
Yeah.
Because I have so much debt.
Yeah.
So that money comes out of my account every single time. Because I quit that job, fell into massive debt, because now I'm using my credit card to pay all my bills.
Yeah.
And so now I'm making no money. So I'm making like $400 a week right now. And I'm like, God, if you want me to go to Honduras, how am I going to do it with no money? If you want me to give to people, if you want me to do things for people, how am I going to do it when I have no money? And God's like, trust me.
That's all.
Trust me.
I would argue, though, that there's also this flip side to this. I don't want to get too crazy into this, but...
Oh, you're about to trigger me.
Acts 27, when... Paul says we're all going to survive, but you should all eat something because you haven't been eating because you're so stressed about this storm and everything. And he says, eat something so that you have the strength to survive this. Mm-hmm. He knows God is going to keep them alive, But there's also some like buy-in there for them of like, you physically, you need the strength, you should eat something.
Yeah.
And I think this job opportunity you have right now that you're kind of like, I'm not really sure what I'm going to do about it. It might be that bread for the prisoners. Does that make sense? Like, you're like, yes, trust God that he's going to provide for you. But maybe the way that he wants to provide for you is through this extra little bit of work. Does that make sense?
Possibly. Oh, I think if I could have my, just specifically about this job.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm going to speak rationally here, which is unimportant to the theme of our conversation. But like, I would make less money if I worked there. I'd make less money than I am now. I'd make $20 an hour.
Yeah.
I'd be driving an hour, 2 hours.
And you're
every
not
day.
Sure. It's not like a steady for sure.
Winter
thing.
Hits. I might not have work. But also, I don't know. I might make more money. But I'm, what I was saying to you the other day is like,
it's less secure. It's less guaranteed money.
Right. This job is like, I just need to be there at 8 and leave at 5.
Yeah.
And I get
right,
paid.
Right, right, right.
And there's practically nothing I can do to make them mad. You know what I mean?
At this point, yeah, you're the only employee. So
right.
What are they
going
to do?
They literally can't fire me. but this job with AJ, right now, what I mean by it feels like a no is it feels like not something I'm going to quit my job right now and definitely do.
Yes.
But I get what you're saying.
It like, could be the extra.
Right. So God is definitely giving me that. God gives me, when I'm struggling, God, my friends ask me if I can come help them with a job on the weekend.
Yeah.
I'm like, sweet. There we go. There's my money. But I don't know. Honestly, a big part of it is my status has changed, and that hurts me as well. You know what I mean? Like, my financial status is, like, lesser, and I have less, and I can do less, and I can offer less, which kind of makes me feel, like, less.
That is interesting. That's interesting, because from a congregational standpoint, or even people outside of the church, there's something, I don't know how to, this is not true, the truth of it, but there's an appearance of, there's an appearance of it being an honorable thing to be a pastor and be like not making a lot of money. You know what I mean? Like, the humility of that, whereas like if I, you're saying like, I don't make a lot of money at my job because I have a job that's like a low income job.
Right.
From the worldly standpoint, that's difficult for you to say that to people. When, if you were to go like see someone you haven't seen in years and you kind of want to impress them, which why do we want to do that? That's just a weird human thing. But sometimes that's what we think. And someone's like, oh, what are you doing these days? The job that you have, it would be hard for you to like justify that as success from a worldly standpoint, right?
Right. Every time I tell somebody what I do, I say apartment maintenance.
Yeah.
I'm not like, oh, yeah, I'm a construction superintendent. I work for this builder in Indiana, and we build like 100 homes a year.
Right.
Yeah.
So, And then you're like, I don't. This is how much I make. That makes you feel like shame because we have this like financial status in America. What I'm saying is, there's still somehow, at least like for congregationally or outside of the church, where people will be like, that's noble that you don't make very much, but you're doing ministry. Right. So like, there's a status in that. But within the circle of pastoring, sometimes there is not that status. They're like, oh, you're only making so much. Like, not the money's everything, but there is like, oh, is your church struggling or what? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's this weird other mentality. And I don't think it's right, but I think it's interesting to note that we have different perspectives. Because for me, for people to say that there's like, that my status is like, when I tell people I'm a pastor, I don't ever feel like, oh, I'm just a humble pastor. You know what I mean? Like, that doesn't make me feel like shame about that. Even people who are not believers, when I tell them I'm a pastor, they're at least like, oh, well, benefit of the doubt, we hope that that's a noble thing that he's doing.
Right.
You know what I mean? Whereas that's not the case if you just say like apartment maintenance.
Right. Well, it's specifically not the case. Like construction is like this whole environment
it
of
is.
Like pride and ego in a lot of sense. And technically I'm in construction, but like a guy that pours concrete thinks I'm a clown bleep that.
Clown bleep.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's like, so now I'm trying to sell to them what I do. So now I might be like, well, I do facility maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
I do corporate facility maintenance.
Yeah.
I manage 100 units.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, things that sound good.
Instead of like, that literally does not matter. It doesn't matter what I do at work or how much money I make. It matters what I'm doing outside of work, what I'm doing while I'm at work, what I'm doing before I go to bed, when I wake up. The example I'm setting as a Christian, it doesn't matter the example I'm setting as a construction worker. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
This was a heavy one.
Banger.
And a long one.
Hey, dude, I just want you to know you're my favorite pastor.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. I was going to make a horrible joke. I'm just not.
Was it about my mom?
No, it was going to be about other pastors, and I'm just not going to do it.
Yeah, we need to stop talking bad about other pastors.
I need to stop.
Man.
I need people, to chill.
You know,
I actually
drop
talk-
this at 11 o'clock on Friday.
Drop a diss track. I actually talked to somebody about that this week in my church where I'm like, well, I talked about it a little bit in the Bible study where I'm like, is it my job to correct? This is a tease for another episode because we'll talk about this in another episode. Is it my job as a shepherd to correct other shepherds when they're misleading the flock? I believe biblically, yes. But the difference is, what is my intention behind why I want to correct them? And why do I know the things that I feel I need to correct when I don't really know these people that well? That's a problem, because that in itself is like, then I'm potentially fueling gossip, but then I'm justifying it in like, well, but I need to help these guys get on the right path.
Yeah.
So that's maybe a topic for another time. Is like, what does it mean to correct potentially false teaching or correct a shepherd who has gone astray from a shepherding perspective? Yeah.
Let's talk about it on the next episode.
Yeah. Which will be, yeah, that sounds good.
2 weeks.
Yeah, we'll have an episode coming out. Yeah, every week. Every Monday.
We haven't missed, dude.
No. And we're planning on not missing, so.
They say consistency causes growth, and we're not really seeing the benefit.
We'll see, buddy. We'll see. I think we are, but it's a slow and steady wins the race kind of thing. I don't know what race we're trying to win. We're not in any kind of competition.
Trying to win that race Paul was talking about.
Yeah, man. That's right. And that's the truth. And God's truth won't back down, and neither should you. Stay focused.
Stay aggressive.
And stay relentless. Stay
far. You know what I'm saying?
You got it.
Dang. You got it, girl.
I gotta pull that off.
You got it.